Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself, how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A-game. A-man, no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A-game, better bring your A-game. Competition starting to get thick. It's the click, so I hope you watch your A game.
Hey, mate, no rain. Hey, now it's the Mike and JD show, and I'm your host, Mike Gilbert, and I'm joined as always by JD. Oh, by God, Oliva, how you doing, JD?
You almost dropped the by God. I'm good, man. It's we are officially halfway through the school year. Got through the finals. Had wrestling season stuff. We're just about halfway through the wrestling season. You know, it's been a thing. Like, I'll tell you something. I don't think I've had we start our break tomorrow, but we have to set up for a tournament that we have on Tuesday. So like, I don't really get a break, but at least I don't have to teach tomorrow. So I'm pretty excited about that.
That's cool, man. Yeah. And I'm pretty excited for the upcoming holiday. It's weird. So in the military, we would alternate like weeks off. So essentially like, you know, when I was in charge, me and my boss, we would take turns. Like I would stay like during Christmas week, and he would take, you know, and then I would take New Year's week off, and then he would take Christmas week off, and I would, you know, like we just alternate, right? It doesn't work that way in my new job. So I actually have to take vacation time on Christmas Eve, and I'm taking vacation time on the day after Christmas. But I was informed, it's like, why are you taking vacation time? And I'm like, well, because we have to go to work. And they're like, nobody actually goes to work on those days. I was just like, it's like you can work remotely, but like, you won't have to do anything. Just keep your computer on you. I was like, what? I already put in for the vacation days. So I essentially burned a couple of vacation days. And with the way that my job is now, we work remotely part-time. So it's 3 days at the office and 2 days at home.
That's awesome.
You gotta make sure that you get your swipes in. You swipe your badge to get into the building. You gotta swipe it 3 times a week, right? But apparently that's blocked out for holiday weeks. They don't actually track it. But because I'm a conspiracy theorist and I don't trust it, I'm going in tomorrow. I'll probably be one of like three people that actually shows up to work tomorrow. So I'm gonna go in. I'll be at the office. I'm gonna make sure I get my badge swipe in. So I'm gonna make the trek all the way to Charlotte, even though I was literally just there. Went to a Christmas thing that they had at the Charlotte Knights baseball stadium. It's called the Truist Field, next to Bank of America Stadium, which is where the Panthers play. My wife bought tickets, and she didn't know, and I guess I didn't know either, that the Panthers and the Buccaneers were playing in a battle for first place. So naturally, all of Uptown Charlotte was fucking packed, and I'm like pushing my kids in a wagon through a bunch of drunk ass Panthers and Bucks fans. And they had a last second finish. I missed the whole game because I was, we were at the mall right before that, and we were driving up to Charlotte. So kind of had a busy day, man. I'm a little bit tired, but I think we're going to make it through the show.
Yeah, same. I'm a little bit tired. You know, it's this time of year gets exhausting. The Bears, first place in the NFC North.
Yeah.
Beating the Packers. That's always a great thing. We go up to a tournament up in Green Bay in a couple weeks, and my buddy is a maniac Bear fan, our head coach, and he's gonna be decked out in this ridiculous Bears jacket and Bears Zuba pants, and like, so we're not very good this year, so it'll be fun just to keep ourselves entertained by pissing off all Wisconsin people with that. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, I actually stayed up late and watched that game, and it is because I went to bed at like 9 o'clock on Friday night, which I have not been able to do in a long time, but my kids were asleep. So my daughter, for out of nowhere, requested that I come lay with her to put her down. She always wants mom. Both kids, all they ever want is mom. And so I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll just do my own thing. Well, Friday night I get requested. So I go up there. Naturally, I fall asleep laying in bed in a 7-year-old girl's bed with draped in a pink blanket and a Paw Patrol pillow. That's how I slept on Friday night. So I fell asleep like a little after 8. Then I crawled out of her bed and I got up. And I turned on the TV and I was just like, no, I'm doing it. I'm just going to go straight to bed. And I went back to my bed and I went and passed out at like 9 o'clock. So, but I did get a chance to watch the Jake Paul fight.
I also watched it out. I did. We were traveling. We were at a hotel. So we went to, Jesus Christ. I'm embarrassed to say this. We went to Twin Peaks Friday night. You ever go to a Twin Peaks?
I know. I remember the TV show though.
No, it's nothing to do with the TV show. It's actually a trashier Hooters with like kind of worse food because my friends are, I don't know, children, I suppose. So we went there for dinner. But they, on the upside, they had both the Oklahoma-Alabama game and they had the Jake Paul fight, which I didn't know Jake Paul was fighting. I had no clue. I'm so focused this time of year on coaching stuff that I hadn't been on Twitter, and they're sitting there talking Jake Paul's going to fight again. I kind of roll my eyes and like, yeah, he's fighting this Josh something or other. And Paul's like, is he fighting Anthony Joshua?
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy fucking shit. That's a real fight. Like, yeah. I just been so out of it. How long was this fight booked for? Cause apparently I live on Mars.
Well, hold on. Let me get rid of this. Hold on. I got a beast that broke into my office here. This is Finn the cat, everybody. He's making his debut on the Mike and JD show. He's named after Finn from Star Wars, the newer Star Wars Awakens, The Force Awakens. Yeah.
Force Awakens.
Yeah. So it's pretty funny that he was all white. So my wife's like, what do you want to? She's like, we should name him after a Star Trooper. And I'm like, Star Troopers don't have names. I was like, wait a minute. There is a Star Trooper with the name Finn. And then it turns out he's a black guy, but he's all white.
I thought you were making a joke about you named your all white cat after the only black Star Wars character, like him and Lando.
Yeah, yeah. No, I named it like it's just the only Star Wars like stormtrooper that had a name.
Right.
So, yeah. Hold on. Let me get rid of this cat and shut my door.
We're gonna get rid of Finn. I'll waste some time on Mike. So yeah, I'm so out of the loop right now as far as like pop culture stuff goes. My life revolves around amateur wrestling this time of year. I have the high school kids for 2 hours a day, and then they leave, and then I have little kids. And then I'm with my kid, and I stick around, and I make him exercise afterwards. And like, so this is all I do. I haven't slept right in weeks. I think I fell asleep at like 3 o'clock in the morning, Friday night going into Saturday. That's because of other reasons I might talk about at the end of the show. I don't know if I want to or not yet. But yeah, man, I had no idea that Jake Paul was going to fight Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, well, it's because he was originally fighting Tank Davis, and Tank Davis is like super small. I think he's like 155 or something like that. And Tank Davis got jammed up on some charges again, I think domestic violence of some sort, which is like typical Tank Davis. He's been in trouble for that a lot. And Jake Paul put out this ridiculous statement. It's like, I will not do business with somebody on this with this kind of record. And I was like, dude, like we've all known about what Tank Davis is. Like he's had this record. That's why his career is, falling into the shitter. So that ends up falling through. And then they were scrambling because Netflix already bought the show, right? So right. It was already they already had the dates booked. I think they actually moved this one to the right a little bit, but they were scrambling to find an opponent because they got contracts in place already. So I think they were looking at maybe Francis Ngannou, the former UFC champion who Anthony Joshua just knocked out within like seconds.
But
Ngannou's are just a tough guy to deal with business wise, and they couldn't get that deal done. So they were looking around all these other places, and then they landed on Anthony Joshua. And I was just like, the only way that this fight makes sense is if it's fake. And boy, was it not fake. It was a legitimate fight. And Anthony Joshua knocked that brother out and hurt him bad.
There had to have been a clause in the contract to let Jake go. Like just let the fight go long, because Anthony Joshua is a stone cold killer, and like he just kind of it was like watching Roy Jones fight. He was like just point or Floyd Mayweather fight point. Okay, I won that round 10-9. Won that round 10-9, and then like Jake Paul shooting double legs and falling all over the place. Like what the fuck is going on here?
Dude, were you able to hear the? So okay, so I passed out at like 9 p.m. on Friday night, so I didn't get a chance to watch the fight live, but I stayed away from my phone, and the first thing I did on Saturday morning was put that fight on because it was on Netflix. So I was able to watch the fight spoiler-free from like bell to bell, so nothing, like I was able to enjoy it like I normally would. And Mauro Ranallo was openly trashing this fight for how bad it was, and because Jake Paul just could not stay on his feet. Like honestly, the referee could have called a lot of those knockdowns, even though he was like just slipping and falling. He probably should have just called them knockdowns because he was slipping and falling because he was just so gassed and he couldn't handle Joshua's weight. You know, Anthony Joshua cut weight to make 245. He came in the ring like 260, right? I mean, he had to easily.
They said Jake Paul was like 220. I said, bullshit. That brother looks like he's maybe 200 pounds. I don't buy that he's 220. He's a big dude. He's a pretty, people shit on Jake Paul. He's a pretty good athlete. Like he's not a bad boxer, but he's not the heavyweight champion of the world. You know,
He's a really good boxer for a novice. Yes. Right? But he didn't go up through the knock on him is he didn't go up through the system, and he's fighting washed up MMA fighters, and he fought Mike Tyson. And so this is like the first, he fought Tommy Fury. Tommy Fury is a legitimate boxer, but he's also not like a great boxer either, but
he's not his brother.
No.
Yeah.
But he, you know, the fight wasn't a good fight. Jake Paul proved that he doesn't belong in there. He proved that he's a tough guy, but I think everybody kind of already knew he was a pretty tough guy because he's been hit a lot of times before, and he kept getting knocked down and getting right back up. So
yeah, he's tough, no doubt.
Yeah, I got to give him his props there, but you know, this fight just proved everybody's point that this guy doesn't belong in there with real fighters.
I mean, I just like that Anthony Joshua was like, all right, now it's time to end this thing. Boom, boom, boom. That knockout punch was the best. Like Jake Paul hits the ground, and you just see him go, wow, because he knew he'd never been hit that hard in his life.
Yeah, everybody was saying that that Ngannou was a joke because of, you know, he got knocked out earlier and then Jake Paul lasted longer with Anthony Joshua. Ngannou went in and engaged and went and went toe to toe with him, and that's why he got knocked out quick. Jake Paul,
Mike, did you see the size of that ring? They made that extra large ring so Jake could run away from him for as long as humanly possible, and he gassed himself out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. So Paul wasn't going to chase him, you know. Joshua wasn't going to chase Paul around, which is what Paul was wanting. And he waited for him to get gassed out. And then he did the smart thing and knocked him out when he had the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Broke his jaw. This was literally a tune-up fight for the Tyson Fury fight coming up. So kudos to Anthony Joshua for getting paid a lot of money to fight a guy who is absolutely no threat to him. And now he's going to parlay that into probably a bigger money deal, into a legitimate fight where he's going to get his ass kicked by Tyson Fury.
It's possible. They fought before and Tyson Fury won. It could definitely happen again. I think that Anthony Joshua, he's not a big star in the U.S. Like in the U.K., Anthony Joshua is a massive star. Here, a lot of people, like I said, I was with some casual sports fans, right?
Yeah.
And none of them had heard of it. And I know Anthony Joshua because, you know, I'm combat fighting circles and I'm pretty, you know, pretty casual on most of it. So I think that what he did was he really helped cement his star here in the U.S. overall. And I think that was a really smart move for Anthony Joshua's Q rating, if you will. So I think now that guy's going to be a much bigger star and be able to draw more money in this country doing whatever. I mean, Tyson Fury's a fucking bad dude, man. Like,
yeah,
he's a bad dude. He's so hard to fight. He's so big. Like, I don't know if these guys realize how big these guys. Tyson Fury's like 6'8". Like, Anthony Joshua's like 6'5". Like, Mike Tyson was 5'10". In the 80s, fighting these guys, these heavyweights are insanely huge.
Yeah, Lady B has a good point. Just waiting for Jake and Logan to be WWE tag champs in 2026.
It's possible.
I'm surprised Jake hasn't gone to WWE. He's making so much money boxing right now. That's probably why. Logan Paul had a couple of fights, but he isn't the boxing star that his brother Jake is. Jake became a way bigger boxing star because of the strategy. Like, he's boxing, you know, Nick Diaz and Anderson Silva. And no, he didn't box Nick. He boxed Nate, I think.
The other one.
Yeah, Nate. Yeah. And then, of course, you got the Tyson fight. But
this whole thing of these freak show boxing fights, like, that's what they are. Like, it's just a bunch of dudes who have never boxed. People are like, this is a disgrace to the sport of boxing. It's like, have you followed boxing over the last 150 years?
Yeah.
Like, it's the most corrupt sport in the world. Like, that's why I was watching this. Like, someone's like, this is just gross for boxing. I'm like, man, do you know how many, like, there's a reason why the mafia ran boxing. There's a reason why Las Vegas was the hub of fighting for so long. Like, let's be real. This is hardly a stain on the sport of boxing. Like, I wish Robert Silva was around to have this discussion right now.
Yeah, man. I really do miss his analysis. He was a great guy.
He was Robert, awesome.
Rest in peace, Robert Silva. He would be shitting all over this whole thing.
Totally.
He was such a boxing purist.
Oh, yeah.
And, but like, the guy was just so smart. And he would just randomly send me messages, like, educating me about the history of boxing. And I just loved having that guy around. I was so sad whenever I heard that he'd passed away.
Yeah, sad. He was a good dude. He was like again, that was a guy I could listen to him, because back when we were on Fight Game, he would talk some fighting stuff sometimes, and I would just listen to him talk. I'd be like, I don't know shit about any of this. Like, I would never feel more dumb about a sport than after listening to Robert Silva talk about boxing for a long time.
Yeah.
I'd just be like, this man's a fucking genius. Like, when it comes to boxing, it's incredible,
dude. The recall, insane.
Yeah,
his recall is insane. Andrew Huntley makes a good point. He says that Archie Moore's last fight was against Ted DiBiase's dad. Yeah, Ted DiBiase Sr. So they did a boxing. I heard about that. Yeah, they did a boxing match.
Interesting. I had no idea. Chuck Wepner was the basis of Rocky, and he fought Andre the Giant. That's a trivia question I think everybody knows.
Yeah. Well, because Chuck Wepner went in there and actually showed his toughness against Muhammad Ali in a fight where he got, you know, bludgeoned. But and then of course did the Shea Stadium that Wepner and Andre did their work.
It might have been a Shea show. I forget. Was that on the Bruno Zabisco show? No, that was actually Hogan and Andre.
Yeah, that was Hogan and Andre. That was 79. So it would have been years before that. I can't remember. Now we're talking out of our ass. So
no, that was 81. I think 81. It was Bruno Zabisco. Maybe, I don't know. We should look. If somebody in the chat can look this up for us, because Mike and I are in the middle of a show. When was Andre versus Weppner?
Hold on. I can do it. Andre the...
I don't get to put the giant. If you just put Andre versus Weppner, it would have shown up.
Yeah. Andre versus Weppner, 1976.
Okay.
I mean, probably. I wish I could just pull this up and we can, like, you know, watch a clip of it. You know what?
Why not? I nothing else to talk
we,
about.
We could probably just do like a clip of it, right?
Sure, why not?
Without getting it nuked.
I mean, who owns this? It's probably WWE, but I think
it's the Fed.
Yeah, probably.
Here, let me just do it since we're just
I thought they didn't care about their archive footage anymore.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's watching our show anyway. Who cares? Let's see. Good point. All right, here we go. Is the money right out? That's all it asks. Oh, this is like a documentary.
This looks like an HBO based on those lower thirds, so we can probably get away with this. Was 6'6"
or 6'6" and a half. Oh, come on. Let's see the fight. You can barely see anything, so I don't think we're going to get nuked.
Where is this?
I don't know. I don't know. Let me see.
The lighting.
It doesn't say it here or anything, so we'll... All right, I don't want to get nuked, so I'm going to pull that off. But there you go. Yeah, Andre the Giant and Chuck Weppner did a whole deal. And then that was the basis of Rocky versus Thunderlips, Rocky versus Hogan in Rocky 3, like that fight. So
I didn't know that, but it makes complete sense. That makes
total
sense.
No, the first fight was the first Rocky was based on Weppner versus the first fight was based on Weppner versus Ali. Oh, so we had it right. Andrew Huntley did the research. He said it was that shit. Yeah, okay.
Look, I was right. All right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So the first fight the first Rocky was based off of Ali and Weppner. And then Rocky 3 was based off of Weppner. Well, that Thunderlips one was based off of Weppner and Andre. And then Sylvester Stallone ends up doing another movie where he's like in prison playing soccer and stuff. That movie was based off of Chuck Weppner going to prison. So he did three movies based on Chuck Weppner's life. That's why Chuck Weppner sued his ass later in life.
Yeah. Yes, that's 100%. What movie? I don't think I ever saw this movie. What movie was Stallone?
Hold on. Now I have to do the hold on.
Lock Up.
What's that?
Was it Lock Up?
Sylvester Stallone, a prison movie. Lock Up. Yeah, 1989 film.
Pulled that out of my butt. I don't think I've seen that movie since 1989, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I was a big Sylvester Stallone guy, and I probably have not watched that movie.
There's a lot of turds that float around in that punch bowl, the Sylvester Stallone career. For every Rocky or Cobra, there's a Rhinestone or Stop or My Mom Will Shoot floating in there. He's got a lot of turds.
Hey, Rhinestone with Dolly Parton was big in the Gilbert household in the 80s, for sure. For sure. That movie was on a lot.
You know, movie I wish was better. It was Paradise Alley. I wish that was a better movie. It's really
bad. Dude, I gave that a real shot.
Me too.
Yeah, I gave that a real shot.
Over the Top. That's a classic.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we will not speak ill of Over the Top. No. They made a movie about I know Norm MacDonald has a whole bit about, you know, divorce, custody, and arm wrestling. The movie fucking works. It just works. It's a great movie. I love that one.
And you know what? Like it's super cheese. I could watch that right now and still love it.
Dude, we could if we wouldn't get us in trouble, I would absolutely do a watch along of that right now. I loved Over the Top.
Since we're on the topic of 80s movies, so it's no secret that I'm a big fan of Expedition Unknown with Josh Gates. Like, he does the show every week. He never finds a goddamn thing.
We just watched, my wife and I watched for the first time, he did the DeLorean. They did like a 6-episode thing on finding the original DeLorean. I loved it.
Yeah, they did. But last week's episode is them tracking down the real Goonies story, the real treasure hunt from the real life version of it. I didn't know that was based on a true, thing.
Like a true pirate story? I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea either. So I went ahead and I watched the Expedition Unknown episode where he's going down, because he said that the Goonies, that movie, like, is the reason why he became like an explorer the way he is. Like,
no kidding.
So he said that was the one that really turned him into what he is today. So he says So he didn't know that the story was based off of like a real legend from that area in Oregon. So he went back and he looked it up and he's like, no, there was actually like real gold found and all that stuff. Like One-Eyed Willie's like a real character. It's like really? A whole thing. Yeah. So I went back and watched The Goonies last night. I was like, okay, well now I have to watch The Goonies. I haven't seen that since I was a kid.
My wife and I both love that movie, and the kid's away at his grandparents for a couple days, so we're going to have to check that out tomorrow. Thank you for putting that on the docket. As you guys can tell, there's a really slow week in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
So Mike and I are bullshitting.
So, but watch Expedition Unknown first, mm-hmm. the latest episode where they track down the Goonies story, and then watch the Goonies. I think you got to do it back to back, because for me, that made the Goonies better, knowing that there was like a real story to it.
I love the Goonies so much. Like I got such a soft spot in my heart for like these stories of like bands of kids doing like incredible things. I think that's why I like It so much. I think that's why Stephen King's It is probably my favorite book. And yeah. like the movies are my favorite adaptations because it's that idea of like these little kids doing something beyond themselves. Like I love those movies. I love the Monster Squad, which is basically Goonies with vampires. Like I love yeah. The Lost Boys, which is also basically Goonies with vampires. Mm-hmm. Like I love that concept so much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. And I love the 80s genre of movies. And like, you know, obviously Steven Spielberg, you know, everything he touched back then was gold. So, next topic, MJF returned this week. He was on a hiatus for months. It seemed, doing some more movies and stuff like that. I can't remember what movie he was doing, but he returned to Dynamite on Wednesday night. He cashed in his Money in the Bank briefcase. And he made the challenge for World's End for a fatal four-way where he's going to challenge Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, and Hangman Adam Page for the world championship. So, JD, is it smart for MJF to cash in his Money in the Bank where he has the least chance of winning?
So, no. Why would you do that? Why would you intentionally, like, especially with those three, there's no. Why wouldn't you just say, I'm going to see who wins and I'm going to cash in? Cause that's what a WWE thing would do. So we want to not be WWE while in fact embracing all their tropes, like right. a Money in the Bank cash in, like a fatal four way, like I don't have to pin the champ to win. So I guess when you're talking in the character of MJF, it makes sense. Cause it's the most WWE thing possible. How shitty a year was it in pro wrestling that Triple H actually lost Booker of the Year to Tony when he's putting this crap out there? Like according to Sports Illustrated, like Jesus Christ, yeah. people are like, oh, AEW is a promotion there. I'm like, it's my favorite promotion. It sucks. Like, what are you guys yeah. talking about?
You know, it's very, very up and down. I think in Q4, they for the most part had been doing some stuff that's kind of like right up my alley. And I agree. But when MJF came back, and I was fine with him burying everybody in the ring. That's MJF. That's what he does. That's yeah. like that's his gimmick. And so that made sense. And I thought he did a great promo. He even called Swerve Strickland P. Diddy, which I thought was pretty funny. He goes, you both love baby oil and you're both shitty rappers. I thought that was a good line.
Pretty good. Yeah. People got yeah. mad about that one online. I did see that. I did pop into Twitter on Thursday. People were really mad about him calling him P. Diddy. So that's yeah. when you know an MJF promo kind of hits is when people actually get themselves worked up over it.
Right. Yeah, for real. So I'm sure the match is going to be good, but as soon as you tell me that your main event is a four-way or a three-way, I just stop caring.
I was gonna go. It's here. It's right down the street from my house. And I'm yeah. like, I'm like, Swerve and Joe, I think I'm in. Oh, Ed Heyman, okay, I can do a three-way. MJF and a four-way. I'm like, I'm checked out now. Like, I don't want to watch that. Hate that shit.
Yeah, I hate it too. It's like this is my opinion, right? And I, you know, you guys could disagree with my opinion on this, but I think when a booker books a three-way in a main event of a pay-per-view, that's him telling me that he doesn't have any ideas. I, you know, and maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe it is the idea, but I just don't like it. I don't get it. It doesn't make any freaking sense to me. I don't know. I'm okay if they book like say a four-way match because they're needing to get a number one contender, right? But I don't like four-way title matches in general. I think WWE, and this is a total WWE and a TNA problem because they did them on damn near every show there for a while. It became like this booking crutch of theirs where they're just going to like, hey, we don't really have a feud in mind. So, or we have multiple feuds going on at once. So we're just going to throw everybody in the same ring at the same time and put the title on the line. That's just the way I feel about it. So I just lose complete interest when they do that.
So here's what I would do. And I don't usually phantom book this stuff, but I mean, I just thought about this. We were talking because Fatal 4-Ways are lame as fuck. And what AEW has had success with is this casino gauntlet concept, right? What if they had made this a gauntlet match?
Yeah.
With these four guys. It immediately separates it from the idea of the Fatal 4-Way, right? And it adds some stakes into the thing where whoever comes out first is going to immediately want to end the match. Like we've done that in the casino gauntlets where people have not gotten a chance to get in because someone has gotten the pin. So right away, because they've established that in the company, you have a chance to do something different. And then if you say the champion comes out last, then you have three guys, you know, two guys, then three guys trying like hell to win the match before Joe comes out with the belt. So I think right away, just from a psychological standpoint, you've immediately changed everything. Now we're just going to do the fucking same old WWE shit where, you know, two guys are going to fight for a while and then another two guys are going to be passed out on the floor and then one of them will come to and then they'll get passed out and then one will come to. I'm so sick of the trope. Like, it's so overdone. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like it either. I like this comment here. Let's see. I agree. World Championship 3 or 4 ways are cool in video games, but I'm so exhausted of it. AEW used to do a good job of largely avoiding that. Now the past 2 Worlds and pay-per-views have had a 4-way main event. Did they have a 4-way last year at World's End too?
I believe them. I don't remember.
Okay, yeah. I'm too lazy to look that up, so I'm just going to go ahead and say that it's true. Lady B says, go for Takeshita versus Okada. Yeah, that's going to be pretty damn good.
With that. Like, that's going to be a good match. I'm perfectly fine with that. Like, it's an AEW pay-per-view. It's going to be awesome, but I can bitch about the stupid booking shit. Because even Dave says, oh, Tony books for Tony. And it's like, yeah, no kidding.
You know what? Like, people say that's a knock, but I think that's kind of like one of the endearing parts of AEW is that the promoter is one of us, right?
I agree with that.
He's not booking for sponsors. He's not booking for corporate stooges. He's booking for himself. And by virtue of that, he's booking for us essentially. Like, cause he was sitting there reading all the dirt sheets and listening to the podcast and had all the same complaints that we had. And he likes a certain style and a certain genre of wrestling. He does mix in other styles and other genres. You can tell with some of the other stuff that he's done. You can tell when like Mid-South Tony is like locked in what they're doing. You can tell what's different from Mid-South Tony. He's got other things kind of thrown in there because he's, you know, trying to be amenable to other people. But for the most part, Tony doesn't book for the sponsors. He doesn't book for corporate people. He books for the fans. And I think it's okay to have a fan driven promotion. And that's what AEW has mostly been. Now they've gotten away from that for a lot of times.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
Now I'll say this is like, as a creator myself, like I've written a handful of books. I always want to write something that I want to read. Right. I think any creator anyone who says we book this for the fans, you're full of shit. You're lying. Like nobody, that's a terrible way to approach anything from a creative. Like when you try to do something you think people will like, you're not creating. You're not open because part of creativity is opening your soul and letting things out. Right. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with him booking the shows to himself. The problem with it is Tony Khan, I think gets himself more than everybody else does sometimes. So I think he goes from A to D and sometimes he skips B and C. And when he talks about it, he very clearly sees B and C were there, but he doesn't do a great enough job relating it to the rest of the audience at times. Now, I think the man puts together one hell of a major show because the AEW pay-per-views are always fantastic. The TV show from week to week can struggle a little bit. And I think that's more on the lines of that he's not interested in the minutia of booking all the time. And he lets people do the minutia who aren't great at it. For the most part, I think that's how you get some really holes in the TV and how you get 8 billion TV packages. Thank you, Brian Alvarez. I hope you're happy every week. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think Tony's a bad booker, my stretch animation. I do think there's times he gets burned out. I do think, like you said, when Mid-South Tony is on, he's fucking great. Yeah. But there's other times he's not. And people are mad about Triple H. It's like, don't give me Triple H. This John, we came on here ourselves. You and I, who are big, big fed guys, we're super impressed with the John Cena heel turn. We both came on this show and we're like, this is a really interesting place.
I wrote an article ranking the top 10 heel turns of all time. I was so inspired of it. And I put that as number 2 behind Hogan.
Yeah, no. It was the biggest waste of a heel turn of all time because it was all about a moment and they had zero plan. So you can't tell me Triple H is this great booker when he squandered most of John Cena's. I'll say it, he squandered most of John Cena's retirement run. You know, there was nothing great that came out of it. We had this great heel turn that made no sense and went nowhere. And then he came out and just got beat a bunch. Yeah. And then tapped out with a smile on his face. That's not good booking. It's not.
No. Yeah. So the babyface from SummerSlam to December, I know that people can poke holes in logic in some of the stories, but they did do really well with those. And some of the matches were pretty good, I thought. But the problem is that we should have had a year of that. You know, they did the heel turn. And John Cena admitted as much on the Cody Rhodes podcast, which is weird that Cody's got a podcast, by the way. But yeah, and I'm sure it's a very real podcast, but he did seem like he was, you know, like telling the truth. He's like, no, we just did it for a moment and really had no backup plan. And then it just fell apart. And I was like, thank you, John. We saw it play out in real time. That's exactly what happened. And I've never been more disappointed in my life. Dude, I had given up on the Fed in 2017. And then occasionally they would bring me back in. And when the Vince shit went down, I was like, dude, I just feel dirty. Like watching this stuff, you know, and then I'm just like, look, the wrestlers didn't do it. You know, it's their job. So I'm like, I'm not going to judge people based on where they work. I worked for the U.S. federal government for 21 years and there's nowhere more scummy than the government. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to judge people based on where they work. That's just my motto, right?
Great point.
They're just they're out for themselves. They're taking care of themselves. I'm like, that's okay. Okay. So then I kind of, you know, came back a little bit and then the product was just so bad. And then finally John Cena turns heel, which is something that I wanted forever. And it was a great heel turn. It was fantastic. Within a week, it sucked. It's just like, I was so disappointed. I was like, I don't think I can ever trust these guys again. Now, you know, look, I got a podcast. And so occasionally I'm going to watch some of the big stuff, but I don't think I could ever be invested in what they do again. Cause I just think that it stinks. And this stinks because of what John Cena just said. They have no fucking like, thoughts.
I think that Triple H is lazy. I think that when he got the job, because the booking was pretty good the first 2 years, right? They were doing a really good job. And like everyone seems to be in the same position as they were 2 years ago, right? I just don't think he's I don't think he's creative enough or motivated enough. I think he's got his tropes, which is fine. Everyone has his tropes. Stephen King has his tropes as a writer. I just don't see him challenging himself to do something interesting because he had this golden opportunity to do something with evil Kiel Cena, and then they just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like when you have the Hollywood Hogan template to work off of, he didn't do that. He's far more successful in Hollywood than Hogan ever was.
Yeah. So, and I think you nailed it when we had talked about it before, when it did flop early on, you said John Cena isn't embracing it.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't, but I don't blame that on him. It's like, look what they were giving him. It's kind of the whole Sting deal. It's like, you know, Sting struggled as that babyface world champion. Well, look what they gave him, the Black Scorpion, right? Same thing here. Like John Cena comes out, he's got the same ring music, the same gear. Everybody wants to cheer him, and he's saying these things that he doesn't mean in order to get them to boo, and everybody saw through it. And so they eventually just had to turn him babyface again without any storyline. He just came out and said, I'm a babyface, and like that was the end of it.
But that's the thing, though. As a leader and a booker, you need to sit down and go, okay, man, we have this moment.
Yeah.
Triple H has got to sell him. Like, John, we can do something really, really special. Like, think about all these things you could do. Think about all these stories we could tell. They could have really flipped the script on WWE. Like, Cena and Cody could have been, like, a really big thing. It could have been a blood-hatred rivalry, but they just weren't interested in that.
No. Yeah, they weren't interested. Let's get to the chat. I think we bounced around to like three or four different different subjects.
What we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Walk Beside Me says it's actually one of the reasons I converted to mostly just watching Japanese wrestling is due to the abundance of three ways and four ways. It should be top champion versus top challenger. Period. Look, you know, you don't really want to put like hard parameters on what pro wrestling can be, right? Mm-hmm. There's got to be some flexibility. I don't want to say that they should never have four ways and they should never have three ways. I just don't personally like them when it's the main event of a pay-per-view for a world title because it just tells me you have no story. That is my opinion. Not everybody agrees with that.
I would be okay with it if we saw it once or twice a year.
Yeah.
We see them all the time. And it's just so we can get our stars in the main event and two of them don't have to do a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a crutch.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So I think AEW could borrow from TNA and make the four-way match double elimination where someone has to be pinned. I don't think TNA does that.
I don't. You're the TNA guy of the podcast. Has that ever been a thing?
I don't know. I don't know. That might be a thing. Maybe I missed it, but I don't know.
So ECW, the old ECW three-way dance would be you had to beat the one guy, then you had to beat the other guy.
Oh, you know what? So it's not – okay, let me pull his back up, Andrew. So they do that sometimes where it's an elimination match. But they didn't do that at Rebellion last year when Joe Hendry defended against Ethan Page and Frankie Kazarian. And they didn't do that at Slammiversary when Trick Williams defended against, you know, Joe Hendry and Santana. But they have done that before, but I don't think it's like their standard. You know what I mean? It's not like the standard way of TNA doing it.
That was the standard ECW three-way match.
Yeah.
Which is why those were really good. I remember being in Anarchy Rules 99. That was the show when Taz came in as the champ.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone finally leaked that Taz was going to WWE at the time, and everybody, I wonder who leaked it. And everybody was chanting, "You sold out at him," and they made it a three-way match with Taz, Mike Awesome, and Masato Tanaka. And then Taz was out in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it was Tanaka and Awesome, and this just fucking great match, man, that I got to be there for. It was really cool. But that's like, and that's what's something cool that you could do that I think is kind of a lost art is the eliminate. Like, I think just by having, I think he's got a great point, actually.
Yeah.
I think having the elimination aspect of it changes the dynamic, changes the dynamics, and like adds a new layer to it when everybody has to lose. Because like I said, that's what made that match special. Was for a minute we didn't have a champion in ECW, and it was either going to be Mike Awesome or Masato Tanaka. And you know, I think everybody pretty much realized it was going to be Awesome, but there was this chance because they had this epic feud at the time, right? So it was, I mean, it was pretty cool. I would like to see something like that again, just to be different.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
I remember vividly when Taz got pinned in that match. I was like, oh shit, we're going to get a new world champion.
Like, right? Again, we all knew he was going to lose because he was on his way out of the company. But just to see it happen so quick and to see the ECW fans completely turn their back on the guy made for so, which I'm sure just ate him alive in real life.
Right.
Taz, like, it made for such an amazing moment to watch. Right. Paul Heyman was a good booker. Was a good booker.
Yeah. He could be.
He could. Sure wasn't could always. Be. Wasn't always. Right? Everyone has, like, Stephen King. Dude, The Tommyknockers is a shitty fucking book. But Stephen King is the greatest American author of the 20th and 21st centuries. So everyone has their hits and their misses.
Yes, for sure. All right. Let's see. Fightful Select is reporting that Danhausen, the meme wrestler of all meme wrestlers, right. And I think whenever they signed Danhausen, I think it was on our show, and I think you said it. You said, look, if you're going to sign meme wrestlers, you might as well get the meme wrestler. And they brought him in from Ring of Honor. He's been with the company for years. And, you know, he's a hard guy to book, right? Because he can't wrestle. And AEW is where the big boys wrestle. I think that's their slogan, something like that. But I got the Fightful story. It says, in the summer of 2025, Fightful Select reported that Danhausen's contract was slated to expire. However, AEW ended up extending the contract due to injury time. Here's my question. How could he get injured? I never saw him wrestle. Okay.
He was injured. Every time they did bring him in and do something with him, he did get hurt. Donovan Danhausen has a unique talent. It just isn't wrestling. Right.
Yes.
And I wrote it when he first signed, I wrote a piece for WrestleJoy on how they could because I used to write for WrestleTrack, because how they could integrate him into the Warner Brothers Discovery family, and how he could, and I related to, like, I used to watch this show called Grandpa Al's Drive-In Theater, where it was like a Mystery Science Theater thing that Grandpa Al from the Munsters would host, where they would show these old monster movies. And I'm like, this is perfect for Danhausen. You bring Danhausen back, you bring this, he gets to host like a Svengoolie type of deal. He'd be amazing at that. That never happened. It just seemed like a bad marriage. It never really clicked. And then he must have pissed Tony Khan off. Like, they had for every reason to extend him or to not use him. I got a Danhausen mask behind me because my kid, when I took him to his first wrestling show in kindergarten, which, by the way, what the fuck was I thinking about that? I took my kid to his first wrestling show in kindergarten, and he made a big Danhausen sign because I'm like, this guy, he has something. I like him as an individual. It just wasn't a good fit. And then, like, he ingratiated himself to the wrong people and pissed off others. And like, this is like, well, he was a Phil guy. He was a punk guy. So was Dax. And that guy is like on TV every week. Like
Brody King is too. And so is Darby Allin. Yeah. I don't think that Tony's holding things against people because of who their friends are.
Right. I think there's been a lot of stories, and he'll like, it's not true. We don't know. We just hear stories, but I mean, whatever happened, he pissed people off there.
Yeah. The story goes on to say, well, he'll have that freedom. Oh, so Danhausen was not. However, AEW ended up extending the contract time due to injury. Danhausen was not used whatsoever after this. And Danhausen actually wanted the company to let the deal lapse so he'd have more freedom with merchandising and bookings. Well, he'll have that freedom relatively soon, barring someone foreseeing contract extension that would make sense. So it says his contract expires in February of 2026. So there you go. What is Danhausen's future? He is friends with CM Punk. I don't see CM Punk out there like telling WWE to sign up his friends. Like I don't think he's got that kind of stroke.
I don't know if he's got that kind of stroke, but I definitely think he would advocate for Danhausen. I think he could work in NXT.
Okay.
I think Danhausen in NXT or in TNA, quite frankly, makes
watch
a lot of sense.
Watch your fucking mouth, JD. Don't do that to me, all right?
am I full of shit? Am I wrong? Hey, you don't think Danhausen would work at TNA?
JD, are you going to sit here and tell me that fucking Danhausen would work on AMC, the home of The Walking Dead? You think that would work? Fuck no. Like, that makes no sense. Danhausen and Rosemary would fit fine on TV. That makes no sense to me.
Okay. You were selling me hard on that for a second. Yeah. We had a friend who actually had this really good idea for a Danhausen segment in TNA years ago, and it could actually still work to this day. I think that could actually happen. Now TNA is doing some weird things, which we'll close on. So I don't know what's gonna happen with that, but I could absolutely see Phil Brooks advocating for Danhausen to be in either NXT or if that doesn't work in TNA. And what's the difference, really?
Yeah, I mean, they're like, it's like brother and sister, you know, with that. So, yeah, you know, we were all kind of like excited for him, and, you know, because he was the fun meme wrestler. And look, not every wrestler in your company has to be like this great worker. It's okay to have stupid, fun characters that you just have on your show. And Danhausen was one of those. So Orange Cassidy, kind of the same, except for he can actually wrestle. He's actually a really good worker. Yeah, but like he was a dumb fun character that could be on in the mid card. Mm-hmm. The problem is that he was a really good worker too, and like his style ended up working well with AEW, so they're able to put him in some of the main events. But he's just like a recurring character that's probably going to be embedded into AEW forever. I think some of us had hope that Danhausen would be that, but it's never worked out.
And it's okay. Sometimes you go places and things just don't click. There's been a million guys, like, dude, Bret Hart and WECW. That was the thing that just didn't work. Like, I don't know. Like I remember the NWO and WWE didn't work. Like sometimes people, like on paper, you think this could be good. This can work really well. And it just doesn't.
Yeah. Next topic, Matt and Jeff Hardy they haven't re-signed yet, but they're actually on the verge of re-signing with TNA. This is according to Fightful Select. Yeah, I really thought this was going to happen. I didn't think that they were actually leaving. The Hardy Boys have been great for TNA. I know everybody yeah. wants to point to the WWE as being the sole reason for TNA's like upswing in business, but the Hardy Boys are very much a part of that. Like when those NXT stars come to TNA, they're not like, other than Trick Williams, they're not over and nobody's there to see them. The reason why the NXT and the WWE fans are at these TNA shows is for two reasons. One, because WWE told them it was okay. And two, they're there to see the Hardy Boys, right? The Hardy Boys are WWE legends, and WWE said it's okay to go watch them in TNA. TNA is outdrawing NXT, right? So I'm not going to give NXT a ton of credit for TNA's audience. But the most overact on every live event that TNA has, even when Joe Hendry's been on it, has been the Hardy Boys. They got the longest line in merch. They are legitimate draws, right? They are not Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar draws. They're not John Cena draws. But if you put them on your show, and you're not WWE, if you put the Hardy Boys on your show, your ticket sales are likely to spike because they're on it. Right. And
Mike,
and that's been proven in TNA, and it's been proven in these indies all over the country, which is kind of what the Young Bucks were before they joined AEW, is they were legitimate draws, and the Hardy Boys are that.
Well, here's a couple things. One, if you put Joe and NYE on an AEW show, I don't know if it gets that much of a draw. Like, I think there's certain people that within the WWE system can draw, but it's because they're in that system, right? Once they're out of the system, it changes. So I don't know. Two, the Hardy Boys have been at various points in their career, the lifeblood of TNA. A decade ago, they were doing the same thing. When TNA was really struggling, right, when they had lost Destination America, that's when Matt Hardy came out with the Broken Universe, right? And it was it made TNA cult favorites, right? It put a lot of interest into TNA. And the fact that they've been able to do this again, and it restarted, they got re-signed by Deb because they were done. People were done with the Hardys until Broken Matt came along. And then all of a sudden it became the hottest act, and who kind of helped feed that was the Young Bucks. They had this great rivalry, this TNA Ring of Honor rivalry with the Young Bucks and the Hardys. And that was a big draw. And that's what led the Hardys to going back to WWE in 2017, right? Like they've done this a couple times over. That being said, they're a decade older. If TNA weren't to re-sign them while they're heading in, like, what a great time for the Hardys contracts to be up.
Yeah.
Right when they're about to debut on I almost said Destination America on AMC, like, you, they're stars and they're the most recognizable stars. You got to give them what they want because they're the most important people in TNA right now.
You know what? Like, people are gonna sit, like, think that you're being mean when you say that, but no, it's absolutely the case.
Wow.
And it's a complete truth. It's a complete and honest truth. And that's no shade on anybody else in that company. I think everybody in that company would agree with what we're saying.
Matt and Jeff Hardy been stars for 25 years. Like, Matt and Jeff Hardy are wrestling stars. Like, and then TNA is so the moment that they came back to TNA, things started changing for that company. Right? They were already on the upswing. They're really good at grassroots marketing. They're so undervalued. Like, they're so underrated by the pro wrestling community and how well they market. TNA, they're fucking grassroots. They work their ass off to sell tickets every show they go to. And they got the Hardys, who are legitimate draws. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Matt got himself jammed up with the internet wrestling community about his takes on storytelling versus five-star matches. And I don't really want to get into that, but because I thought the whole conversation was kind of stupid. But, you know, so people were trying to say that he was never a draw, that he's nothing without his brother. And I'm like, look, Jeff is the bigger star, but the Hardy Boys act is a drawing act. And Matt Hardy is the one that is the guy that drives that ship. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, his brother is the biggest star, but Matt is just as important as his brother in that tag team because he's the one that's like, he's the one putting the matches together. You know, he's the one, like, Jeff is like just kind of like this weird dude off to the side thinking of like weird artistic spots he can do. But Matt is the one negotiating with the other talent on one how to get these things done. He's the one negotiating the deals. Like, Matt runs the show. Jeff is just like the artistic one. So I don't think that you can have one without the other. I think they're the perfect combination.
Hardy Boys, far more professional wrestling tag team, is like a band, right? Like, sometimes the band drifts off and there's like a star from the band. And Jeff Hardy, on his own for a brief moment in like 2009, was like the biggest star in professional wrestling.
For sure.
But he just can't maintain it long term because he's Jeff Hardy. Like, he just burns bright. You know, whereas Matt Hardy is very much like workman, very much a journeyman, but he's very creative and he's got a great business sense and he's sharp. Matt Hardy's real smart. He jumped to AEW when it was at its coolest, right? When it was at its up, and Matt Hardy said, okay, time for me to go there. And he like worked it really well and just, he just found that he couldn't go anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And that's been Matt's biggest problem is that he didn't have the work rate to hang in AEW, and the AEW fans didn't buy the bells and whistles. Now that Hardy Boys run in AEW that we were about to have, which was self-destructive because Jeff is Jeff, which is a shame because I think it would have gotten some fun stuff out of it, you know, and it would have, but they would have gotten to have a chance to have been the tag team champs everywhere, which I think would have been, as a completist, I think it would have been really cool. I'm probably the only person who kind of laments that we didn't get a true Hardy Boys run in AEW. It's just me. But I mean, like, they're like a band. Like sometimes you get a, like Alice in Chains has not been the same since Lane Staley died. Like they'll do stuff. Jerry's awesome, but Jerry and Lane together made that shit work.
Did you ever go see Alice in Chains with that new singer they got?
No, I don't
care. I did. They opened for, God, I can't remember who they, I don't even remember who they opened for, but I did go and it was a fun show. Like the guy can sing, but it wasn't Lane Staley. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. It's not Lane.
Yeah.
Like it just, you need a band. Like when a band works, it just, when everyone comes together the right way, you got the right pieces fit and it's like, okay, now we got something. It just doesn't, there's just times it just doesn't work when you plug guys in like Journey. Like I remember I went and saw Styx once and a different drummer, different singer. Like, I'm like, this isn't like, you're not the band. Like, it's just not, it doesn't click. The Hardy Boys are like a band. Like they can do other things, but like together, the shit just works better. Like I go back to the Broken Universe. We were done with them a decade ago and they reinvented themselves and they did it again. Like, never doubt them. Don't doubt them. They know how to get over. And Matt's got a point. I like five-star matches. I adore five-star matches. Matt has proven he specifically doesn't need to have a five-star match to get over and sell tickets. Not many guys can say that. He can. Right.
Yeah. And that, I'm so glad that you made that point because everybody's like, it's this either or situation. And I don't really think that he meant that you can't do either or. And he's not saying that because he can't have five-star matches. He's saying that because he doesn't have them yet. He's still a draw and people are trying to debate whether or not that he's actually a draw. And he fucking is.
He is a draw.
Like legitimate draw.
Trick Williams ain't drawn shit for NXT. Maybe someday he can be a draw. I think he's been passed up by Obafemi, but like that guy could be a draw. Like, they think he's burying AEW. He says, no, he has literally said in his shows, no, this is what AEW does. We cannot be AEW. He's 100% right.
Right. Like TNA doesn't have the talent that AEW has. It would be like a football team trying to run their West Coast offense, but they don't have the actual football players to run the West Coast offense. You need to like run a power eye offense, right? It's like saying it's like trying to run a fucking Dan Reeves offense versus a Bill Walsh offense. Mm-hmm. If you got Dan Reeves talent, you shouldn't run Bill Walsh's offense, right? Like they don't do the same things because they don't have the same level of talent.
Right.
Tony Khan has actively recruited talent to fit his company, right? And that is what TNA is actually doing right now. Now, what they're doing is they're trying to get television stars from WWE and now even some AEW actually with the Righteous, who they weren't big stars there, but they were on TV there. Bear Bronson was on AEW Dark, but I think they got something in that guy. I think he looks really good. So that's what they're doing. They're doing it a different way than what AEW does. And neither one is wrong or right.
We had a comment here, Ishmael 802. He says, Matt is nothing without Jeff, in my opinion. I think you're missing the point that we're trying to make here. It's that Jeff is a big star, but without Matt, he self-destructs. And he does it a lot on his own. Jeff on his own only lasts hot for a certain amount of time, and then something bad happens. But yet when they're together, it works better. Yes. So it's not that Matt is nothing without Jeff. It's not that Jeff is less than without Matt. It's just that when Matt and Jeff are together, it works better. Yeah. Like I said, they're a band, right?
Right.
They're a band. Like, okay, John Lennon had some pretty good hits, right? Instant Karma is a freaking killer track. Truly is. You know, Wings is fucking awful. I don't care what anyone tells me. I hate names. They fucking stink.
They had a couple of hits.
They did have some hits, but they still stink. Because it's Paul McCartney.
Yes.
Right. However, the Beatles was amazing. Right.
Right.
You cannot tell me. You can say I don't like the Beatles, and I understand that. You cannot deny the fact that those two together had 20 number one singles.
Yes.
Right. Well, sure. Lennon and McCartney worked better than Lennon and McCartney solo. And they had hits. They had stuff. It worked.
They
solo,
did.
But not and, like it did together.
Right. And you know what? Like Jeff Hardy's run lasted about as long as John Lennon's run before John Lennon got shot. Well, right.
Mark you know, Chapman had some other plans for that.
I mean, yeah, like, but I think the parallel is great. Like Matt Hardy is Paul McCartney, right? Mm-hmm. Paul McCartney is way better with John. John is way better than with Paul. Yet John was still a bigger star than Paul was. Now Paul is probably more famous right now because he's still alive.
He's alive.
He's still out there doing television.
Yeah, he yeah. won. Like he won the battle of longevity. Like
right.
John, but people would tell you John was a genius, and John was, you know, John is very. It's like comparing the two of them, like that is absolutely perfect. John was absolutely Jeff, right?
Yeah,
and Matt is absolutely Paul. Like. And then actually, when you could break this down a lot further because John was definitely way more avant-garde, which definitely fits into the Jeff category. Like that's actually an excellent comparison. But
yeah,
again,
and then so that makes Rebbe Sky Yoko then.
Hey, you said it, not me.
And then like we got to like okay, who's Pete Best and like who's Ringo? Like we can go down the fucking rabbit hole with the Beatles,
Senior, what was his name? What was the father-in-law's name? The gardener, Senior.
Oh, Senior Benjamin.
Senior Benjamin is yeah. That's Pete Best. Okay. Actually, no, Shane Helms would be
George.
Would be Pete Best.
Oh, he would be
because he didn't he, the original he went drummer. Somewhere else. He got kicked out. Yeah, he got kicked out before they got famous. You know?
Yeah. Like Shannon Moore is like George Harrison, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
We can ball game this like comparing the Beatles to the Hardy Boys. I could go
and
all
sure,
day on
that. And I'm sure Matt Hardy would catch us and be like, wow, that's awesome. Like I'm sure he would like to be compared to like this. But the point is, together the Hardy Boys work better. And it's just proof. Look, what you cannot like TNA. I don't love TNA. But you can look at what they're doing right now and saying they've got an audience that they're serving, and it's the strongest TNA has been 15 years?
Easily. Yeah. Easily. Yeah, for sure. Let's see. What about Michael Hayes? Michael Hayes would probably be their original producer, in Britain, right?
George Martin.
Yeah. He'd be a George Martin, and Vince would probably be Ed Sullivan. You know, we can go all day on this
we
stuff.
We can do with this. Maybe we can actually do this.
Okay. All right. So TNA contract. I'm just gonna run through the contract updates really quick. So TNA is signing talent to like 90-day deals. There was like an erroneous report out there. I think it actually came from Dave. Sorry, Dave. But saying that AJ Francis, Steve Macklin, and some other folks had signed those deals, that was not the case. Like Macklin not only has not re-signed with TNA for a 90-day deal, he hasn't signed anything with TNA as far as I can tell. And in fact, AEW was at the Hammerstein tonight, and so was Steve Macklin hanging out with Josh Alexander. They posted the picture online. So I'm not saying that that's where Steve's going. I'll be honest. I would love for Steve to get a shot on a bigger stage. I don't see Tony Khan being interested, unfortunately, and that's a shame. I think that Steve would do great there, but he was there. I don't know if that's a power play by Steve or he like legitimately is just like hanging out with Josh. But I hope it's a power play. I want him to have that power play.
His wife works there too.
Yeah,
they're still married, right? Him and Deanna?
Yes. They have a podcast together actually now.
Oh, I never know. That's kind of cool actually. Yeah. That's really, I was like when couples do podcasts. I think that's a smart move. Hey, my buddy Josh works for Tony. Tony likes to write big checks. You know, that's smart. That's a smart move. I think TNA is completely stupid if they don't resign Steve Macklin. He has been one of their most consistent, and that's their guy. Like nobody gave a fuck about Steve Cutler. Like Steve Macklin's a dude in TNA. Like if they don't resign him, that's a massive mistake.
I think they'll get the deal done. You know, whenever they did the whole the intro for TNA on AMC, he was such a big part of that video that they had in there. They're really promoting him as a homegrown guy. He was just in the main event, and they had a war game style match on Impact this week where they crushed those NXT nerds. And he was a big part of that match. I think that he's going to stick around. At least I hope so. Just for the sake of Brace for Impact, I think a lot of that hinges on his success.
It's your favorite wrestler. It's like absolutely your favorite wrestler right now. There's no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so that was the TNA contract updates. Okay, I thought we were going to do a quick show, and we're already at an hour. The main thing that you wanted to talk about, that I wanted you to talk about, is the Paramount stuff. So let me get to the Paramount story real quick. I'll read some notes here. So WBD has formally rejected a hostile takeover bid from Paramount Skydance, led by David Ellison, on December 17th, calling it inferior and illusory. Illusory, is that a word? I don't know.
Yes.
Compared to their agreed-upon merger with Netflix, this corporate drama could significantly impact pro wrestling, as WBD owns TBS and TNT and the Max streaming service. Netflix merger might reshape AEW's media. I don't think that's going to happen, but media rights landscape. Okay, details on Paramount's rejected bid. Paramount's offer was an all-cash $30 per share deal, valuing it at $108.4 billion enterprise value. It was launched as a hostile tender offer directly to shareholders on December 8th. After WBD had already accepted Netflix's proposal, WBD board criticized it for significant risks, including concerns over financing. The bid relied on over $40 billion in external funding from Middle Eastern wealth funds and Larry Ellison's revocable trust, which WBD deemed insufficiently backstopped by the Ellison family. So, and then there's more to it, but JD, what's going on with this whole thing? I mean, did Paramount just shit the bed?
I told you so. I just had to get that out of the way, because like when we first talked about this month ago, I said, I don't think this is going to happen. And it didn't. Now it went down in more spectacular failure than I thought it would, because Jared Kushner and all his guys pulled out of it. Like, right when they said, like, Ellison tried to do the hostile takeover with the shareholders, and people forget that in order to do a hostile takeover, you actually have to successfully buy the shares. The board and all the shareholders unanimously told him to go fuck himself, because they said this money isn't real. And that's the problem. They're leveraging foreign investors. Nobody knew who these people actually were. It wasn't like MSB is out there going like, yeah, well, let's buy WBD. They said, oh, we'll get this, some of it from here, and we'll get some of it from there, which means we'll just spend a bunch of debt, and we'll just accrue more debt, because money isn't real. Right. And the WBD shareholders went, you know what? I don't like that. I don't think that's a good use of our funds. Netflix money is real. And then we're going to re-spin this off. We're now, because people keep forgetting this. Zaz's plan is to spin this off into two companies, which means two sales. Right. And people keep shitting this down. They keep forgetting that this is what's happening here. And Paramount wanted none of that. Paramount wanted one. They wanted access to that DC library, because the younger Ellison has this vision of AI filmmaking. Right. So the thought of AI Superman movies kept me up at nights. I hated the concept of it. Two, they wanted CNN, which I think they're overvaluing CNN. I've been saying that from the jump. CNN does not have the accrued interest with our generation and the younger generation that it did with our parents' generation. Like, CNN isn't worth anything. And you see what's happening kind of with, right, since they took over CBS, they put Barry Weiss in charge of, she's the editor-in-chief of CBS News, and that's getting universally shit on what they're doing over there. So they wanted to do that again on cable. And I think that David Zaslav and the board for WB is like, we don't want a part of this. Like, this Netflix thing is real. Like, this actually can help us. So let's just go here. And then Ellison, who's the kid Ellison, who's of course a spoiled, rotten little brat, who's used to getting his own way. This is why you have to tell your kids no, because they turn into David Ellison if you don't. He just threw a temper tantrum. And then Jared Kushner took all his like real money and said, okay, we're going to get out of this. This isn't working. And now even the administration is kind of shut up about, now they still have to get the approval. They haven't crossed the finish line yet, but I haven't heard a lot of pushback against this since the Paramount deal faded away. There was a lot of pushback initially, but now with Paramount not, because again, they don't have the money. They have so much debt from the Paramount deal. This is Skydance. It's all Skydance at this point. They accrued so much debt. That's all they're doing, is they're just accruing more and more and more debt, right? They don't have that money. It's not real. So this is where we are. And what does this mean to pro wrestling? Nobody knows, because we have 2 years. And the reality is 2025 is very different than 2023. 2027 is going to be very different than 2025. And nobody's going to be able to predict where. If Tony loses that deal, I imagine they'll go to Amazon Prime. That's my bet.
Yeah, I came out pretty strong immediately saying I don't think this is going to have a major effect. Now, if Netflix ends up swallowing HBO Max and WWE does, if WWE does indeed have a deal in place where, like, you know, they get exclusivity on Netflix, that could cause Netflix to drop WBD, right? Not WBD, AEW, in that sense.
Just but from HBO, again, hold on, just from HBO Max though. Like, remember, as part of this spinoff, HBO and Warner Brothers go this way, and all the television networks are going another way. So Tony has his Tony has two deals. We're forgetting about this. He has his HBO Max deal, and he has his TNT deal, right? The Turner Network deal is fine for right now.
Yeah,
could they lose HBO Max? Yeah, HBO Max itself could be dead, but I imagine the stream, I mean, it's, you can buy AEW pay-per-views on Amazon Prime right now. So I mean, if they do lose that, the thought that it would spin right into Prime is pretty realistic. And the initial TV deal itself is fine, because these are going to be, Netflix isn't touching TBS. That's going to be, remember, the plan is to spin that off in a different company. You're essentially taking Warner Brothers, the WB, and moving it here, and the D of Discovery, they go back to being separate companies. That's what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. Ishmael says, also, guys, the NFL TV rights go up for bidding in 2029. Will Netflix offend an NFL owner by canceling their wrestling show in 2028? Fucking of course they would. you think the other 31 teams in the NFL care about AEW? Of course they don't.
I don't think you have to use Universal. I don't think that all, I don't know how that's going to go. Like, do they want to play nice? Yeah, they're going to want to play nice. But at the same time, like, I don't foresee that being a leverage point.
No. So the only thing I was saying was that the only way I could see this actually affecting them is if Netflix swallowed HBO Max, they all became one app, and there was an exclusivity deal to where the streaming deal for AEW would then get dropped. But they're also possibly spinning off another streaming service for Turner Sports and making that a different deal. So that could work. But like you said, I think future state 2027, I think it makes a lot of sense for AEW just to head to Prime anyway, especially with the loss in, cable homes. Maybe they could just become on, go to Prime altogether, like all inclusively would be nice, like worldwide.
Well, especially with Tony's dealings with Prime, with both the NFL and with AEW. I do think long-term Amazon, and there was talk back in 2019 of Amazon Prime being the, I believe that was if the Warner deal fell through, and it was going to go to Amazon Prime, which in 2019 would have been a death sentence. 2027, we're in a different world altogether. There's an interesting comment that I'm going to pull up. I just saw that. Warner is near its legs. I don't know. And siding with Netflix makes Warner feel like a shell. I mean, not really. Like, this has kind of been like, Warner has merged with so many companies over the years. They merged with AOL. They merged with Turner. They merged with Discovery. Like, this is just kind of what Warner Brothers has been for the better part of 30 years. It's been a snowball. Like, since Jack Warner sold it in the 60s, like, it's been a snowball rolling downhill for decades. It keeps picking up other things along the way. The only thing that stays current is the Shield, right? That WB Shield. Like, it's like the Coke emblem. Like, it's going to be around forever. Like, and that Warner Brothers Shield has more value. And for a film, like, if you're going to put a film out, like a film, a true film, like at the movie theaters, you're going to want that Warner Brothers emblem. You're not going to want to throw Netflix up there. Because people associate Netflix with being home.
Right. Believe it or not, that logo does mean something.
Like, it does. People are
likely to watch it if it's got that logo on there. It's not over for AEW. That's just a secondary part of their deal.
Do you listen to nothing to what I say? They have two deals. It will end the streaming service on Max, and they have a two-year deal, so it's not going anywhere right now. They still have Warner. Like, they're not one more time for the people in the back. Netflix is not buying the Turner networks.
So they're not buying TNT. They're not buying TBS. Yeah, what they're buying HBO Max
and Warner
and the movie studio and the television studio, right? Like, all of the content producing part of, they're buying DC. Right, they're buying. They're not buying the television stations, TNT, like True TV, TBS, and all of that. Discovery. Those are being spun off into a separate deal to be sold.
Right, and quite frankly, Netflix doesn't want those things. Those have no ones again, which leads me to believe that Netflix was the primary partner all along. I truly conspiracy breathing. I think Zaslav and the Netflix people cooked this up a year ago. Personal opinion, can't prove it. they don't want those cable networks because it doesn't fit their portfolio.
Yeah.
Right. So that's not a thing. We have to, like, you people, you don't see this stuff business for how it is. And you don't actually read these things. We read like people who quote, who like reply to Sean Ross Sapp tweets and don't actually like understand this business. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. One Shrey. I like that one. Says the Khan family has so many relationships, no matter what, they'll probably be fine. Yeah, I agree with you. They're billionaires.
Yeah. 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 That's the thing. So the point that we want to drive home is that Paramount failed. They're not getting it. Yeah. WBD saw through it. It doesn't look like they're going to be able to force their way into the situation. It's very likely going to head to Netflix and it's going to have very little impact on AEW. Did you guys get to enough education today from Uncle Mike and Uncle JD?
We're here for you. I'm a teacher. It's what I do.
Yeah. But on that note, I think, hold on, we'll get to one last comment here, and then I think we're going to send it home. I'm shocked Amazon didn't submit a bid for WBD. Buying WBD will be a drop in the bucket for them. Yeah, I'm surprised they weren't in on that.
Amazon owns Columbia and Sony and stuff like that. So like, yeah. MGM, excuse me, Amazon owns MGM. So like, there, and it's that in and of itself brings up the same type of monopoly thoughts. That would be another studio buying another studio, which is something the government would shit on. And like any non-Trump government, which is just, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be political, this is just reality. Any non-Trump government would have shut down the idea of Paramount buying Warner Brothers immediately. Like that's the kind of, that's antitrust stuff. So that's why Amazon Prime kind of laid out. Netflix is in a different business. Netflix doesn't have a theater on, they don't have a studio. They have Netflix. They're what they are. So it's different. This is why when people, like, again, I don't love it either, to be honest with you. Like, I'm looking at this, you know, I have one pit bull that's going to eat a baby, and I have another pit bull that's going to shit on the floor. I'm going to go with the one that's going to shit on the floor because it's less of a mess.
Yeah. You know, what are you gonna do when Netflix makes Batman like a woman in a wheelchair? What are you gonna think when that happens?
Mike. Oracle, Batgirl is a woman in a wheelchair, so it works. It fits. It's fine. They will be following continuity.
Oh well, there you go. I was just making a joke about how Netflix is always trying to shoehorn in that stuff, but it looks like that's already part of it.
This is for Jeremy. In The Killing Joke, the Joker shoots Barbara Gordon in the spine and paralyzes her from the waist down, and then she comes. So like the guy in the chair meme literally comes from her. Like, she is the first character to ever be the guy in the chair who does all the computer stuff for Batman and the Birds of Prey. So that's Barbara Gordon.
All right, well, there you go. All right, guys, hey, that's gonna do it for us this week. Hey, head to patreon.com/themikeandjdshow. More content coming your way. You guys can sign up there. If you guys got questions or you guys got topics for us to hit, head over to the Patreon, drop me a note there, and then I'll put it together. And then JD and I will do some bonus content. We've been doing some match watch alongs and stuff like that. This week it's a holiday week, so we're probably going to go dark this week. But we'll be back with some fresh content coming your way. But again, head to patreon.com/themikeandjdshow. Give us a like, comment, and subscribe. And until next time, mahalo.
Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from the track when we unite and spit. This isn't A game, better bring your A game. Competition starting to get thick, it's the click, so I hope you watch your A game. A made no rain from.
Hey. Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is, how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.